Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Thursday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Skyline Studio above the Chicago River on 720 WGN. You heard Dennis Rodkin's voice there. We will talk to him a little bit later about, you know, Lake Point Tower. It looks like his reporting that there's a move to take that from condo back to apartments. It went from apartments to condos in the late 80s, and now maybe a reversal. We'll talk with him about the drop in sales of million-dollar-plus homes, and also a country music singing realtor in the south suburbs, sort of. That's coming up later in the Biz Lunch. But let's say hello to Roger Chang from CNET now. Roger, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I love this story from this company, Tailspin Studios, where it's a virtual reality company, right? And they give you a headset, and then they teach you how to fire people.
That is exactly correct. The idea here is to, I guess, get you used to the idea of firing someone. That is not obviously something that comes naturally to most people. The idea that, you know, it uses a bit of AI, uses speech recognition to really give you as realistic as feedback as possible with the system. And there's a kind of crazy, realistic-looking older gentleman named Barry, who is who's the subject of the firing. So you have to go in this VR experience and walk through how you would actually fire him.
It reminds me of an old episode of Cheers where I think Norm had a job for a while where he had to fire people. I do take issue with the fact that it's an old guy with graying hair that they're firing, because I look a little bit like that.
Well, actually, one of my colleagues made the same point. Like, without any context as to why you're firing Barry, it does kind of smack of ageism a little bit,
you're
right?
To get rid of the old white guy, yeah. but it's fascinating to me what it does, because you're not just sitting there looking at this cartoon or this virtual reality sort of pixelated being. It's created in a way that it reacts to the way it reacts to how well you fire him, right? I mean, tell me about the different reactions that the firer might get.
Exactly. There are different scenarios. You know, there's one where he gets angry and yells at you. There's another one where he cries. And apparently, if you do the best job, if you handle it well, he'll calmly accept the news. And a lot of these responses or a lot of the reactions are based on sort of how you deliver the news and how you interact with Barry.
Right. So Barry's reaction isn't random. It's feeding off of the way you deliver the bad news for him.
Exactly. And this is the point of the system and why. Folks have looked at VR as a way to train people to do things. Now, firing people is probably one I wouldn't have guessed that they were working on.
Right.
But, the idea that these systems can be smart enough to actually kind of recognize, you know, your tone and how you deliver the news really sort of shows how far we've come with some of this technology.
Well, I would imagine you could take this elsewhere then, right? I mean, this could help you close a deal or make a sale, right, if you're maybe talking to a virtually real client one day.
Absolutely. The firing aspect of this system is probably the one that makes the headlines. But there was another example in which you're trying to close the deal with a CEO of a company who just doesn't really want to talk to you. He's sort of got his arms crossed and
right.
is looking away from you. And so there are other training sessions. So, yes, the how to fire someone is going to catch the headlines, but this system really is more about how to deal with people in the workplace.
And are big companies using this virtual reality? I don't know necessarily about this company, but other companies in training now?
Companies are. I mean, VR is used, I think, sparingly in terms of the workplace for training. I know there have been a lot of discussions about how using AR and VR for things like, you know, training workers to repair a car or some sort of really complicated technical task. As for this particular company, I'm not sure who's using it yet,
right.
But I imagine after the headlines come out, there'll be some takers, or at least some folks who are interested.
So, Roger, you know, we're sitting in Chicago, and Chicago unfortunately gets national headlines because of crime a lot of times in particular areas of the city. And one of the ways they are combating that is they're having license plate reading cameras put in a lot of Chicago police cars. That's just a new sort of crime-fighting method. And lo and behold, now we have a fashion designer slash hacker who has created a way to thwart that?
So, yes. the idea here is actually taking advantage of these license plate readers and really fooling the system. So this designer actually created a dress that basically is lined from top to bottom with license plates. Or the images of license plates. And the idea is that it triggers those license plate readers and I guess, fools the camera into thinking that you might be a car, basically creating a lot of false and junk data and kind of messing with any kind of, like, facial recognition or surveillance.
If you're walking down the street and don't want the surveillance to know that you're walking down the street, you strap on a few license plates and confuse the cameras.
Yeah, well, you really got to cover yourself all, you know, from head to toe with license plates. I mean, you're going to look pretty sharp there, but it'll definitely, that's what will mess with the cameras.
So you can buy a crop top for $50. I don't know that would help me at all.
No. No, you might get some, you might turn some heads, but I don't know how effective that would be.
Turn something. I don't know if it would be heads or not. Okay. hey, while I've got you, let me just check in on 5G, because we're always talking about it, that it's coming. I think it was it GE that said that they had it coming, or AT&T rather said they already had it when they didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, where are we when it comes to 5G and our telephones?
So 5G is here sparingly, and you're in Chicago. That's actually one of the cities where 5G is actually not well deployed, but it is there, right? Sprint, both Sprint and Verizon have 5G networks on now. If you have the right phone, you can actually tap into it. I wrote recently that the Galaxy Note 10 just got announced, and Samsung also announced a version of a 5G version of that phone for Verizon. And I took a look at that, and I took a look at how some of these different versions of this phone will come out for the different carriers, and they all kind of tap into different networks. And right now, the bottom line is 5G is great to talk about, and if you get it, that's fantastic, but I don't think it's anything that anyone should be paying extra for now, whether it's a pricier phone or pricier service. Right now, the networks are just too limited. The phones aren't compatible with each other, with the other networks, right? So if you buy this Verizon 5G phone, you can't later on take it to another network. If you fast forward a little bit to 2020, the phones are going to get a little bit faster. They're going to be a little bit more power efficient. And they'll be able to hop between different networks. And at that point, between mid to late 2020, you'll get a decent amount of coverage to the point where, you know, it's not a happy accident that you've run into 5G. Like 5G will actually be around you.
Roger Cheng is executive editor of news at CNET. Roger, great to talk to you again today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, so some kind of weird thought processes or memories coming up for me. I was reading about this new app. It's called NICU2 Home, and it comes from the Prentice Hospital. And on the phone line now is the president of the organization, Cheryl Skender. Cheryl, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks so much for inviting me to have the opportunity to raise more awareness about French Prentice and this NICU2 Home app.
And NICU2, that's how you say it. NICU2 Home is how you say it.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I was a little confused. So let me just tell you, my daughter was born at Prentice 23 or 4 years ago, and she was in the NICU for a time. And it was a very difficult period. It was her first child. I didn't really, and I think back now on some of the things I did there were just very odd. My thinking was odd. I was so out of sorts by the whole ordeal. In fact, I went to buy a computer when she was in intensive care, which I think is crazy now, and brings us to this time when now people with computers can use an app to help keep track of their baby while the baby is in intensive care. Explain this for me and how it's going to be used.
Okay. So, as you said, Steve, it's a really frightening time for parents. And oftentimes, it's, like you said, the first child, or perhaps they have another sibling that they're concerned about at home. The pressures of the mom's working, the dad's working. We're all crunched for time, and now we have this newborn who is critically ill and is in the NICU. What this app does is provide real-time information 24/7 about that little newborn in the NICU unit. It provides the weight, the current status, is the child eating, diagnosis, just all real-time information. So when you're home, if you get a chance to take a break, you're out and about, you can log into your app and know exactly all the stats and what's going on with the baby.
I would imagine even just a little peace of mind if you're going out to get a cup of coffee or to grab lunch, you know that you're not completely leaving.
Yes, exactly. And they have in their first initial group of testing with over 300 parents and families have gotten such terrific responses and such terrific feedback about this that it's going to be a game changer. And not only to the parents, but just giving some peace of mind to grandparents and extended family. I know my own grandson 2 years ago was in the NICU for over 3 weeks. And, you know, you don't want to have the claws on your kids, your own kids, and trying to find out information. So, yes, we've gotten terrific feedback from everyone. It's been great.
So grandparents or friends could use it as well.
Yes, parents obviously have to give permission,
that's another great. You talk about a stress reliever there. That's exactly right. So you're not dealing with your own parents or your brother and sister asking questions they can find out too. That's a big deal, I think. Yeah.
It really is a big deal.
Is it fairly unique at Prentice, or is this becoming widespread?
This, as far as I know, is unique to Prentice. Friends of Prentice funded this in its entirety, and Dr. Garfield and Dr. Lee have been approached by other hospital systems to further elaborate and be able to have this app available. We're in the final stages of all the testing and tweaking, but this has got great potential to go to not only to Prentice, but to other hospital systems that provide NICU services.
That is fantastic. It's NICU 2 Home. It's the new app available at Prentice and made possible from the Friends of Prentice. And you have a fundraiser coming up, in October?
Yes, thank you. We are the charitable arm, the only charitable arm of the Prentice Women's Hospital. And our big fundraiser is October 26th at the Radisson Blue. This year, we are going to be honoring Dr. Mike Sokol, whose career spanned over 40 years in obstetrics, high risk. He's delivered over 6,000 babies in the Prentice Northwestern community. So I'm sure one of your listeners was actually delivered by Dr. Sokol.
That's hilarious. So check it out. Give it a Google search and help out the Friends of Prentice. Cheryl Skender, the president of the organization, thanks for joining us. Thanks for the good work, Cheryl.
Thank you so much. And check us out at friendsapprentice.org, where you can find out much more information about the app, us, and our upcoming gala.
Thanks very much, Dave Schwann. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Dennis Rodkin is in the studio, writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business, and we were just talking about college housing and all that. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. How are you?
I lived in a hole when I was in college.
Yeah, I sort of did, too.
And our kids don't do that so much. My son, anyway. My daughter, they very nice places.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I would drive to Cubs games with my parents. They'd take me once a year. We'd go to the Cubs game. They'd go up Lakeshore Drive, and we would drive by Lake Point Tower.
Oh.
No kidding. When I'm 8 or 9 years old, and I said, I want to live in that building one day. I had no idea what it was. So I've always kind of followed and watched Lake Point Tower. I remember when it went from apartment to condos in the late 80s, right? Would have been the late 80s?
Yeah, 89.
And now it's flipping back?
Well, there is somebody who wants to flip it back. Whether it will happen is the big question. You weren't the only one. You know, I mean, I hate to use the word because it's overused, but it is an iconic building.
Well, it was a different city then, too, because you're driving around the S-curve. I mean,
right.
it kind of was out on its own back then.
Yeah, there weren't all these other towers that are in Streeterville that sort of lap up against it. But even with all these new towers, it still sits out there by itself. It has these remarkable views that you're never going to be able to build in front of,
right?
Because the Lakefront Protection Ordinance protects or prevents construction of any other buildings on that side of Lakeshore Drive. So there is an investor group. They hope to convert it to apartments. They started sending out letters to owners saying, specifically, we want to convert Lake Point Tower back to apartments. My question is whether it will happen. They're a small group, as far as I can determine. They wouldn't give me a lot of details, but a small group. And this is an enormous project. The biggest condos to apartments deconversion we've had so far is River City in the South Loop.
We talked about
We've talked about several times. That's a little more than 400 units. Lake Point Tower is over 800.
Wow.
So you're talking about a very large project. You're going to end up having to buy, at some point, all 857 condos.
You did some funny money math on this, some extrapolation, right? What do you think it would go for?
It would go for at least $600 million. probably more like $650 or more. Which would be an enormous undertaking, and these investors have not done anything at that scale.
How is it that that can be, that could pay off by renting out his apartment?
I assume that they have done the math. You rehab these into like the most luxurious of luxury apartments because of the setting and those wonderful curves in the building that give you these great views. I assume that they have looked at the math. Again, they wouldn't give me many details. And that they have determined that the cost of acquisition and renovation all pencils out when you've rented all the units. Now, there are a couple of obstacles in their way. One is, as I said, they haven't done anything at this scale. The other is that the homeowners association of the condo owners association at Lake Point Tower has just tightened up the rental cap.
I like that idea.
Yeah. And so the point, the reason that's an obstacle is it's going to take you years to buy out over 800 condos. You're probably going to want to rent the ones you've already bought, let's say the 200 you've bought while you're trying to buy the other 650. And if that rental cap is this low, you're not going to be able to rent them. You can't have an income stream from those rentals. So it really...
So you'd be sitting on empty property for...
You might be, yeah, which is may be an effective obstacle to this conversion. Although the other potential obstacle is that these are small... organizations trying to do a very big job.
Well, and the other thing, though, is that you could have the building have to be 85% vacant, right?
Right. That's the other. We talked about this. There is a proposal that will be considered by the city council in September. It was presented in July, but there are no city council meetings again until September. State law requires that 75% of condo ownership approve a bulk sale for in this case, deconversion, but approve a bulk sale of all condos in a building. And there's this proposal to raise that in the city only, to have a city override where it would be 85%.
Okay, I'm looking at the next story, and I'm not kidding you, but the page is partially blocked, and I look down at the picture. I'm like, oh my God, that's my house. I thought there was a picture of my house. And then I realized, no, it's just the garage for the new Kellogg Dean's house.
Oh.
I'm not kidding you. I thought it was my house. Like, no, it's just one part of the little wing of this.
I didn't really. So you weren't kidding when you said you live in a hole. You live in a garage. And when
I said I lived in a hole. But so Bruce Rauner sells his home to the new dean of the Kellogg School at Northwestern for $2.75 million.
Right. So I think we talked about a month ago when he sold it. He and his wife, Diana, put it on the market, sold it very quickly, sold it in about, I think, 65 days, which is pretty good for Winnetka. They built the house in 1996. Of course, they have another home here. They have a more than one condo on Randolph Street. And then they have ranches in Montana, et cetera.
They'll be fine.
So it's not that they're uprooting from Chicago. They do appear to be uprooting from Winnetka. I haven't seen them buy anything else there yet. But they sold it pretty quickly. We reported that at the time. And now we know that the buyer is the new dean of Kellogg.
Right. And so, and good for her. It looks like it's a beautiful home.
It does. Yeah, it really looks. It's a sort of Hampton-style home. It does. It looks like a nice one. And they got it for a pretty good price.
For $2.75 million?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm struggling here because I'm going to say something that's unfair. And I apologize in advance. But, you know, we talk about the cost of college and the cost of education and everything. And here's the dean of a school buying a $3 million home. I don't know where, maybe they have had wonderful luck in business elsewhere, too. That's what I mean. It's unfair, not the right thing to say, but I just can't not quite say it.
Our intern wrote that story. I was involved in other stories, so I don't know Whether she did, I might have, if writing the story, tried to determine where she's coming from. Is she, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe she's selling a $5 million house in another city or something like that. We don't know any of those details, and we don't know her income.
I shouldn't have said it because there's so much I don't know. It just jumped out at me.
I would assume that as a dean...
due next week.
Because, no, there you go. It's on your mind.
Yeah, right.
I would assume that there is some sort of assistance there, that she has a housing bonus or something like that, but I don't know anything for sure.
And Kellogg's huge. It's a huge part of the school. It's a great draw. It's certainly of great value and all of that. Just struck me. Okay, I want to take a break, and then we're going to talk about country music in the South Suburbs.
Sure. And Ma Linda's got down payment assistance, and they'll underwrite you with the quickness my inspector.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. That was not Garth Brooks. That was Sean Cochran, who, he's a realtor. Is it in Orland?
He's in the Southwest suburbs. Plainfield, Joliet, Naperville, that sort of thing. He's with EXP Realty, and this is his take on I've Got Friends in Low Places. I just love, so this song is going to be in your head for the rest of the day now, but I just love that he turns I've Got Friends in Low Places to, or the whiskey, the beer chases my blues away. He turns it into the mold chases most agents away. It's really clever.
My inspector goes to low places where the radon glows and the mold chases most agents away.
Yeah.
But he's a relatively new agent, right?
Yeah. So what's interesting about him, Steve, is he's new to real estate and he's new to country music. We're on radio, so I'll have to say rather than show in the photo, he's black. And he points out, he says, I quoted him in the story, look, I'm a black man with freckles. You don't expect a country song coming out of my mouth. He discovered country music, or he got more into country music this year. His mother moved to Houston. He goes down to go to the rodeo with her. He buys a hat. He ends up buying boots. He ends up liking the music. So when he decides, he's also new as of last October to selling real estate. So when it comes time, he wants to make a video. He's now got this hat and boots, and he already drives a pickup truck. He pulls up the Garth Brooks song and writes a parody.
So what he's doing is he's creating he's creating a persona, right?
Absolutely, yeah. He wears the hat and boots, which he's wearing in the video and driving the truck in the video. He does that if he shows up to show you a house.
Right.
Yeah, this is imprinting his name. You and I are doing it now as well, imprinting his name in the heads of people who may not have a real estate agent for when they go to buy a house. They're going to think Sean Cochran.
He told you, so in the videos had 500,000 hits, million hits.
He said he put it on Facebook in mid-July, I think July 11th, and he says it's had 500,000 views since then.
And he says he hasn't had a direct lead from there, but I think as you were just alluding, he's like, well, I'm getting in people's heads.
Yeah.
And if something comes up, then it comes up.
He's had about 24 sales so far since getting his license in October, which is okay, fine for a first-time agent, but once this video starts really sort of pulling buyers in or clients in, he may have quite a second year.
Okay, so my favorite part of the story, though, is this isn't his first video.
This isn't his first rodeo, I think is what you meant to
no,
say.
No, it is his first
it
rodeo.
It is his first rodeo, that's
but
true.
His first video is from The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
And nobody watched it.
Nobody watched it.
This is something that only Rodkin could write. According to YouTube, the video of The Little Mermaid song had been viewed 7 times as of August 14th, and 2 of those were by a Crane's reporter. So what, you liked it so much the first time you watched it again?
Yeah, exactly. I watched it twice, so I'm 2 out of 7 of his views. Yeah, so and that one, the other thing is, he didn't have nearly the production value on that one. He's sort of standing in front of a green screen, singing this song. He tells me that he's been writing parody songs and other songs most of his life. So he wrote that one, and it's just kind of a static sort of camera in front of a guy, while for this one, I've got my inspector goes to low places. He hired a videographer. He, like, dances in a cornfield. It's a higher level of production.
See, and everyone thought we were going to talk about Chance the Rapper and Remax. No,
exactly.
It's Sean Cochran, and what's his agency?
EXP.
EXP. Well, we wish him luck. But real quick then, so Chance dropped Remax in to a song that he released, and was that... because that's where he met his wife, but is that in hopes, is that going to help Remax?
I think it will. He didn't do it to help Remax. As far as I can determine, this was spontaneous or not something that he arranged with Remax. It's just what he dropped into his song. He uses brand names. And I think it would. I talked to a Northwestern marketing professor who said, how much better a celebrity endorsement could you get? Because this guy doesn't, he's not sitting saying, hey, you guys should go use Remax. He's saying, essentially, Remax changed my life. Right. I met my wife there at a Remax office party. And so I'm this young home buyer, this young potential home buyer. I love Chance the Rapper. I know he used Remax. Wouldn't I think of going to Remax?
I mean, he drops Rodkin into music, right? Didn't he?
Not quite as positively.
Okay, gotta go. It's nice to see you again. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Steve.